This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 46A of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's special two-part episode, we go beyond 50 with your host, Kate Kinsey.
Hi, this is Kate Kinsey, and I'm here on Kinky Cast because I want to talk to you about a very exciting thing called Beyond 50. Basically, when I was about 12, 13 years old, my mother took me to see Gone with the Wind. And I may be dating myself, but this is back when you had to go to the movie theater instead of, you know, sitting at your home downloading something from the internet. When I saw Gone with the Wind, I fell in love with my first dominant male, Rhett Butler. And when he grabbed Scarlett and carried her up those stairs, I said, whoa, I want that sort of intense passion in my life, even before I knew what it was. I just knew that I responded to it. And a lot of people, you know, have had that same sort of reaction when they picked up that book, the book that everybody's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey. When it first came out, I could not literally walk down the hall at work that somebody wasn't carrying on a conversation about that book. People were reading it on their lunch hour. People were talking about it out in the smoking area. People were in the elevator having conversations about it. And it was just amazing how widespread popularity of that book went. And I think it says something that a lot of us are looking for more passion, more sensuality. And I think it spoke to a lot of people, just the way that Rhett Butler spoke to me way back then. So if you're looking for Christian Grey now, well, I hate to break it to you, but there aren't that many really wealthy, young, well-hung, sexually dominant and experienced rich men who are also single and don't live with their mothers. That's the bad news. The good news is there is a whole world out there full of people who are interested in these kinds of relationships. And whether you loved 50 Shades or you hated it, I'm kind of in the middle. I think it's a great thing that people have been exposed to something. And if it opens your mind and your heart to greater exploration towards a more fulfilling sex life, I'm all for it. But now, Beyond 50 is something started by a large group of volunteers, writers, and lovers of erotica who've been doing this a while and actually live this in their own lives, so we know what we're talking about. We've written books for a long time, and Beyond 50 was kind of started when Laura Antoniou, who is one of the greatest erotic writers out there right now, and if you're interested in BDSM and you like that whole dominant submissive thing, you really need to check out Laura's The Marketplace series. It is a great fantasy erotica about a marketplace where slaves are trained and bought and sold. You know, back when we were at the Southeast Leather Fest, I had the wonderful opportunity to talk to Laura Antoniou, who is a great author and friend. But take a listen to the interview that we did with her earlier this year. Laura Antoniou, real close.
Close.
I knew I was going to screw it up.
That's okay. My wife of 17 years does not pronounce my last name right, but it is actually Antoniou.
Antoniou.
Nope, you don't slur it. It's actually four syllables, Antoniou.
Antoniou.
Close.
I'll work on it.
Yeah, but you could call me. This is why
I got a recording of it.
This is why I tell people to call me Laura.
Okay, thank you. I am very grateful for that. You are most well known for the Marketplace series.
Right, for better or worse.
But you have been writing a whole lot since, I think, like 93?
The Marketplace came into print in 92, but it was not my earliest book. The Catalyst predated the marketplace, and also my gay male, completely non-consensual SM novel, Muscle Bound.
I remembered reading that you had done some writing under it. That was under a different name?
Yeah, under the name Christopher Morgan.
Great. And you are here at SELF this time. You've done a couple of classes. I just got out of one. It was just wonderful. The name of it was That Ain't Necessarily So. Lies, exaggerations,
and silly shit you keep hearing in the scene.
And it was very enlightening and entertaining and thought-provoking, and I think that's what most people really, I mean, we love your stories, but we also love the fact that you're a voice of reason that makes people stop and reconsider the things that we keep hearing. So,
well, I don't know. I certainly like to think that I'm reasonable or realistic, but of course we all are in our own bubbles of realism. The thing that makes me speak up, though, is when things happen in the scene that make people feel bad about themselves,
right,
or what they do. And I'm not really invested in debating things that we have no set definitions for, and I don't get involved in that sort of thing, but it does raise my ire when I hear people lying and making other people believe their lies.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, I read something where someone named Kate Bornstein said you were the Mark Twain of BDSM.
Kate Bornstein is a true hero. She is a trans activist, out for over 30 years, who has changed the lives of thousands of people. And I am really, really proud that she's considered me a friend for over 20 years now. And we've carried on a very delicious flirtation over which we have never actually acted. And I dedicated a book to her once because she's a hero.
Well, that's great. Obviously, she's a fan of yours. So it's a mutual admiration society.
I am honored in her esteem.
I know that you started out in the 80s now, groundbreaking leather women anthologies. Is that part of the Some Women that I just asked you to sign for me? Or
no, Leather Women 1, 2, and 3 were anthologies that I did in the late 80s, early 90s for lesbian SM fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, when I first put out the call for submissions to Leather Women, the call for the sequel collection for Pat Califia's groundbreaking Kinky Women anthology went out, and every dyke I knew who wrote stories had sent all of their stories to Pat, like all of them. All of them. It was a much smaller world then. And so I wound up writing a few extra stories under different names in Leather Women. But it sold really well, and so the publisher engaged me for two more anthologies. And out of that, I also did Some Women, which is nonfiction, which is women writing about doing SM. And I also did By Her Subdued, which was a collection of short stories about dominant women, and No Other Tribute, which was a collection of stories about submissive women. And both of their titles were taken from classical literature. By Her Subdued is from Fairy Queen, and No Other Tribute is from Shakespeare.
Yes. Excellent. And your most recent foray, besides the Marketplace, you recently, the sixth book in the Marketplace series, or have I got the numbers wrong? The Reunion?
The Reunion is 5.
Okay.
All right. It actually came out in 2001, but was reissued last year as first an ebook and most recently a paperback. And the problem with The Reunion is when it was first issued by Mystic Rose, it was 600 pages long. In order to make it small enough to make it cost-effective to ship, the typeface was 8-point.
Oh, wow.
That's smaller than the New York Times.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people had difficulty reading it. And it was the last book that Mystic Rose printed, and so it had the shortest print run. And so it became very rare. Now I'm with Circlet. And after a couple of years, they gradually re-released each of the books. And with The Reunion, they had the big problem that in order to make the printing legible, the book is over 1,000 pages long.
It's quite hefty.
Yeah. You cannot hold this book in one hand. It can't. But that's good, because it's not one-handed reading. but I pity anyone who has osteo, you know, issues with their fingers who have to hold the book. I advise them to get the ebook edition, which, of course, weighs nothing.
Yes. Oh, the Marketplace fans were thrilled with it. I mean, everybody wants more Chris Parker.
And they will be getting more Chris Parker in the sixth book of the series, The Inheritor.
And I've been following you on Facebook and read about your trials and the massive work ethic that you have writing. I wish I were as dedicated to writing as much as you are. You really seem to do it every day.
Well, that's not true.
Not true. Okay,
nope, not
good.
True. Since I finished The Inheritor, I have edited an anthology, but I haven't really written much.
Okay.
I'm working on the outline mm-hmm. for my next book, but I haven't actually added pages mm-hmm. to it yet. But that spell's got to end soon, because I need to get that book written before Christmas. Because it's already going to be 5 months late, and I don't want to disappoint the publisher too much. And I also want them to think of me as someone who delivers a quality book, so...
Is there any way you could get in touch with George R.R. Martin and just whack him on the head and make him feel the same way?
You know, I'm sure George is putting as much work as he possibly can into this. I cannot imagine what his codex looks like for the world of Westeros. He must have an entire room with wall-spanning charts of who's related to... I saw a cute video on the internet the other day, what it's like reading the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It's like, here is Sir Janister Mannister, who was killed by Sir Hoyle of Poyle while eating quail eggs. And I was like, yeah, I would be, like, serving the same things at all the meals. I would have everyone with repetitive names. I wouldn't know who was a second cousin of who and what war was fought when. And so I my hat's off to him. I don't know how he keeps track of that shit.
He does a great job, but, boy, I'm anxious for the next one,
Me
as
too.
We all are. And I know, that's why I did this totally inappropriate digression off into something that I know that we're both fans
yeah.
of. So, but you've also, you've written a wonderfully funny BDSM murder mystery.
Yeah, The Killer Wore Leather.
The Killer Wore Leather, which is about a murder that takes place at a leather contest. Not too much different from where we are right now.
Huh, you'd think I'd been to one or two.
I was going to ask you how you researched this book, because it really sounds like it's someplace that you've been.
I produced Ms. Northeast Leather in 1992.
Oh, okay.
So 14, 22, a lot of years ago. 22 years ago, I produced a leather contest.
Mm-hmm.
So by then, I had been out in the scene almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had gone to leather contests, small ones. I'd gone to IML, I'd gone to IMSL. I'd gone to fashion shows. I mean, we didn't have a weekend event every week like we do now in the scene, but I was already going to almost anything that existed. And since 1992, I have judged so many contests, I cannot tell you. I honestly don't remember. Everything from big ones like IMSL and IML to small ones like Ms. Pony Player Bayonne or whatever. and so, yes, I have vast, vast experience in the scene.
Well, I think it shows in the book, but you put it to good use. It was very funny.
Thank you.
It had some erotic, kinky moments in it, but it was also just a darn good story.
Thank you.
And I know you just mentioned that you were going to be green-lighted for the sequel.
Yes. Yes, I already have the contract. It's going to be called Menage a Murder.
Yay!
And instead of taking place at a kinky leather conference, I am going to kill off an erotic author. And so in the next book, I will get to poke fun at the world of erotica, romantic erotica, which some people now call romantica.
Oh my.
Right? And so I'll be able to bring back some of the characters who were in The Killer Wore Leather, because naturally they would also be involved in that world, like Dr. Mickey Abraham.
I loved Mickey Abraham.
Yeah, Mickey Abraham is thinly disguised me.
Yes, yes. I think I figured that out halfway through and went, oh, okay, this is really funny.
Yeah.
But when I got to the part about the Pansexual Institute for Sexual Studies, and I realized that their name would be Piss, I thought, she is really letting everybody have a little taste of humor here.
Yeah, and I'm really grateful that people in the scene have largely read the book and realized that all of this is in fun and love.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really making fun in a mean way.
Mm-hmm.
And we are that ridiculous to the outside world. And you know what? It pissed me off year after year, occasionally reading a book that was supposedly about a murder in the SM community, and the SM community was always this dark and mysterious hidden underground of masked people who were hiding a countless number of serial killers.
Eyes Wide Shut, perhaps?
Whatever.
Okay.
And I'm like, you know what? We are a comic book convention where sex happens.
That's a good way of looking at it.
And we are that goofy to the outside world, and why shouldn't they see us as we are? And of course, all the inside jokes are there for the people in the community. And a gay male group in San Francisco picked the book for their reading club for their book of the month last year, right? I think it was in March. And they read the book, and then they all got together to talk about it, as one does in a book club. And apparently they spent 20 minutes trying to figure out who Max Steele was based on.
Max Steele being the victim of the crime.
Yes, he was a thoroughly unpleasant man.
Yeah.
And so they all knew someone who could be Max Steele, and I said, exactly.
Exactly. I remember telling friends about reading it. I said, you'll recognize, even if you don't know who she might have actually had in mind, you know somebody in our community
that fits. We have types.
Yeah, yeah. But the Killer Wore Leather's gotten some great reviews. It was nominated for the Lambda Literary Award.
Yeah, it was a finalist.
I was really rooting for you.
Yeah, me too. It was disappointing to lose, but I got to tell you, in all the language of people who lose everywhere, it was an honor to be nominated.
It really was, though. That's a big deal. And an Audie nomination as
yep,
well.
I have never been noticed by these people before. I have never been mentioned in Publishers Weekly before. And so the Killer Wore Leather has gotten me attention in places I could not have ever gotten with the Marketplace books. I mean, the American Library Association, LGBT subgroup, listed The Killer Wore Leather as the only mystery in their list of books of note for last year.
Wow.
And I... Come on. The ALA.
Yeah, yeah.
I was dancing around the apartment after that, you know, in my socks.
Well, you are a hardworking person. You're everywhere. You're always out there working and talking to people, educating and thought provoking. I'm glad that you're making inroads with the Killer Wore Leather. I hope to see more of that as well as more Marketplace.
And you will.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here with us. But, you know, there's a lot of other authors, and Laura said, why don't we get together, and we put together a website, and we'll put together a free anthology from a bunch of us writers to say, hey, this is out there, it's beyond 50 Shades, and if you are looking for more along that line of erotica in BDSM, here is a wide variety for you to choose from. The Beyond 50 is at beyond50.com, and we will be having a bunch of different selections put together in an anthology that will be an absolutely free download. It will include a lot of erotica from all sorts of vantage points, from the male dom female sub to female dom male sub to lesbian to gay, to and all kinds of, there's some dramatic historical stuff, there are some thrillers, there's some fantasy, and there are some pretty hot memoirs. There's even helpful nonfiction, including my own new book, Ha-ha, you knew there was going to be something in here. I have to pimp myself for the new book. It's called How to Be a Healthy and Happy Submissive, and it's available on Amazon.com. So please go and take a look at it. If you're looking for more information about how you can turn your fantasies into reality, I have put together, from my nearly 20 years of hard-won experience, it's not that I know more than anybody else. I've just done all the stupid stuff and learned the hard way. So I'm sharing my knowledge with all of you. So I hope that if you're looking for nonfiction, you'll seriously consider checking out my book. Again, it's How to Be a Healthy and Happy Submissive. It's available on Amazon.com. It's available in paperback, and it's available in a ebook download. And, you know, we all love those ebook downloads because we can be anywhere and nobody knows what we're reading. Unless, of course, you start drooling and I can't help you there. So be careful where you read your erotica. Anyway, you want to go and check out beyond50.com, beyond-50.com. It will give you links to all kinds of writers. There's going to be some blog posts, lists of books, and a bunch of other stuff that we're still working on content, and it's already up, but it's going to just keep growing until Valentine's Day of 2015. We're working on the anthology now. I really hope that you'll consider expanding your reading. I have as our esteemed guest D.L. King, who is the maven of erotica. I think this woman is probably one of the busiest names I see out there. She's not just writing it, she's also editing anthologies and collections. Welcome, D.L.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here. I you're saying that, and I'm thinking I am awfully busy. That must be why I'm so tired.
Well, you know, when you look at someone's website and you see all these current works, and when you see them on Amazon, you see a bunch of titles that come up with when you check on their name, you're like, wow, she's really putting some stuff out there. It makes me feel guilty about my own lack of work ethic.
Oh, no.
Oh, well, thank you for that. So when do you sleep?
You know, I don't know. Lately, I've been thinking I haven't really been doing anything, and all I want to do is lie around on the couch and, you know, watch Sleepy Hollow or something. somehow I'm managing to put out all this work, and that must be why I'm so tired. But, I work full-time, and then I come home and kind of write and edit full-time after that.
Yeah, it's like having two full-time jobs.
It absolutely is. It is exactly like having two full-time jobs.
And sometimes I think it might even be three, because you tend to work harder on the things that you love.
That's true, isn't
so,
it?
Yeah. So tell me, when did you first know that you were kinky?
I've probably known it most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I have this story that I tell to people, and it's absolutely true. I live in New York now, and I've been here for most of my life, but I grew up in South Texas, and when we were kids, my father would take each of us, as we turned 12, kind of as a coming of age kind of thing, to Mexico for the afternoon. We'd shop and we'd eat lunch, and you know, it would be nice. As a family, we used to go all the time because we were 2 hours away. But this was a special, you know, daddy-daughter kind of trip. And so when he took you to Mexico, you got to buy pretty much whatever you wanted, and I came back at 12 with a black bullwhip.
Dear, that's quite a choice at 12.
Well, and you know, I was very I'm short, and I was even shorter then, and it was a 6-foot bullwhip, and I used to spend every afternoon in the front yard practicing with my whip, and I got really good with it. And nobody thought that was weird. And maybe that's because I lived in Texas. I don't know.
Could be. You know.
But thinking back on it.
That was a tip-off. You were attracted
might have
then.
Been. Might
well,
have been.
No, that's great. But man, that you had some high standards wanting to learn the bullwhip. That's a tough toy to master.
Well, you know, I could do it great when I was 12, 13, 14, 15. Yeah, I don't think I could do it now. I live in a New York apartment. I don't have room to swing a whip.
you know, that it's funny that you mentioned that because I have a friend that writes erotica, and she asked me to proof one of her books. And one of the things I had to say to her was, you have this woman practicing with her 8-foot bullwhip in an apartment, and I'm thinking, you know, that's probably going to be hard for anybody that knows about whips to go with.
Right, that's just not going to work. I like a crop in my apartment. A crop, a cane, those are things I can handle.
Well, I they're also safer. I picked up a whip once and hurt myself so badly that I put it down and said, you know, I don't want to do this. That, you know, somebody can use it on me if they know what they're doing, but I don't think I have the femdom in me to practice enough with a whip to be anything but dangerous.
Yeah, well, I remember getting a few stings on my legs and my arms, but you gotta learn.
Well, we've devolved into women and whips here, so let's go back to what we were talking about. The whole purpose that I wanted to talk to you about is there's a lot of emphasis right now, a lot of media attention to that book,
yeah.
The 50 Shades. And so we're happy that people are opening their minds to kink, but hoping that they will delve a little further and maybe read the things written by people who actually do this stuff and enjoy it and find it empowering.
I hope they will, too. I hope they'll read some of my stuff, too, and they might enjoy it. But here's the thing. I've read 50 Shades. I read all three books, and yeah, you know, everybody says they weren't well written, and they're not good representations of BDSM, and that's all true. However, they were addictive, and I did get through them all. And what she wrote was erotic romance.
Mm-hmm.
What I write is erotica, and there is a difference. And I have been told by a lot of romance junkies that my work just doesn't quite do it for them because
mm-hmm.
it's not that traditional boy meets girl and they have problems and then everything works out in the end and they live happily ever after. My stories are not necessarily even about a love connection, although they can be.
Mm-hmm.
But even when they are, they're not considered romance, not
yeah.
true romance. But I think that if people who read 50 Shades are attracted to the kinky aspect,
mm-hmm.
maybe even more so than the romance aspect, they might like a lot of the erotica that's out there. So I hope they'll give it a try.
Yeah, I mean, it's also possible that 50 Shades put it in a very palatable form in the guise of that traditional romance. And now people will be a little bit braver to say, well, you know, I can go a little further.
Yeah, let's explore what's out there. Yeah, I hope they will, too. Because there's a wealth of stuff out there. And everything from really poorly written garbage to to really excellent literature. So I hope people take a chance and start exploring. There's so much there.
Okay, so you're in New York writing a lot of what you call smut.
Smut, yeah.
You know, that's a just as good as anything. I like a good smutty book as well as anybody. But I'm looking at your titles here. One of them, the first one that comes up is Slave Girls, Erotic Stories of Submission.
That's one of my newest anthologies.
Mm-hmm.
I edited this book for Cleus Press, and it's doing really, really well, and it's going to definitely strike a chord for fans of the 50 Shades books in that it's about submissive women and dominant men, which is the same kind of trope that goes on in 50 Shades.
Mm-hmm.
So people who like that aspect, women who are titillated by the idea of being submissive to a man, or being the bottom, as we say in BDSM, being done to rather than being the doer, you know, might really like this book because it's all stories about submissive women. So they might really like it.
There's just so many things that you have. What book would you recommend as just a good smutty read?
Of mine or of anybody's?
Of yours. Let's be self.
Of mine. Okay.
Yeah. Let's be self promotional here.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've got a lot of different kinds of books, and it kind of depends.
You do.
What
I've noticed.
You're interested in. Yeah.
Well, okay. I'll take that to as a chance to ask you about Carnal Machines.
Yeah, I was going to say Carnal Machines.
I didn't realize there was steampunk erotica.
Well, let me tell you, there wasn't steampunk erotica until I put that anthology out. And now there's a lot of steampunk erotica, but I have to say, Carnal Machines, and it was a gold medalist in the Independent Publisher Book Awards of the year it came out. Carnal Machines, as far as I'm concerned, is some of the most intelligently written erotica I've had the pleasure to read. I think that book is really something special. If you're into steampunk or science fiction or speculative fiction and you like dirty stories, erotic stories, stories of BDSM, it's not all BDSM, but it's all erotica, you might find this to be your cup of tea.
Well, I like the idea that there are corsets in it, and there was something I read in a review about fucking machines.
Oh, yeah. It's Carnal Machines, so it's all about steam-age toys.
That sounds fabulous. I'm going to have to check that one out.
It's absolutely wonderful.
The machines are kind of a personal, I don't want to share too much about myself.
Oh, that's okay. You can overshare with me.
Okay.
That's steampunk. People might also really like The Sweetest Kiss, which is vampire erotica.
That's very hot.
It is hot, and it came out kind of around the time, a little bit after Twilight, and it has nothing to do with the Twilight book.
Oh, thank God.
There's not one sparkling vampire in this book.
Not to offend anybody who liked it, you know.
No, I read those books too.
Yeah. You know, if you're reading anything, I'm happy. You know, too many people just don't read.
And my problem is I read all the time. If I'm not writing, I'm reading.
Well, about the only way I can get in any reading is audiobooks. When I'm in the car, I manage to read a lot of stuff. But, you know, I don't find a lot of erotic audiobooks at the library. That may be where I need to find a new outlet for that.
That's interesting. You know, a lot of my books are on Audible.com.
They are? I'll have to check that out.
They are, but I don't know. I'm assuming that when you check out an audiobook from the library, you have to check out the CDs, right?
Well, they do CDs. They've also got something called a Playaway now, which is a really cool little MP3 almost that's hard-pressed to the book. You can't re-record anything.
I see. Yeah, see, and I don't think there are any kind of hard copies of my audiobooks. I think they're all streamed through Audible, and so if you can't stream them at the library, you probably can't do a library version.
Well, I wonder if you could download it to my iPod, because then I could carry you anywhere and listen.
You absolutely can download them to iPods.
That's
and your
the solution.
Phone and your computer and everywhere. Yeah, they're
that
really
will make,
great.
That'll make my drive time a lot more. I won't have such road rage. I'll be thinking about other things.
Well, just don't think too hard about other things. Keep your eye on the road.
Yeah, okay. But you've also got, you do some femdom. Her Wish Is Your Command is one of the collections.
Yes. I do a lot of femdom. That is primarily what I write because...
Is that how you personally identify?
Yes.
Okay.
And so it's easier for me to write femdom because it's something that I can draw on personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what turns me on. And I like to write what turns me on because I figure if it's not going to turn me on, I can't really hope that it's going to turn anybody else on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the object of erotica. So I want to make sure that people are as happy about my stories as I am.
Yeah.
So I do tend to write a lot of femdom. Her Wish Is Your Command is a collection, actually, that I did for Riverdale Avenue Books, and it's all my stories. There are 20, possibly 21, all femdom stories, all femdom male sub, and it's all mine. My other anthologies are anthologies rather than collections, so generally I have a story in them,
mm-hmm.
but all the other stories are written by other authors, but not Her Wish Is Your Command. And also, as far as femdom goes, I did edit a book for Cleus Press called Under Her Thumb,
mm-hmm.
Which also won an independent publisher book award. It won the silver medal the year it came out, and it's all femdom, but it's an anthology, so I have one story in it, and the other stories are by other authors, but it's also really hot.
Well, you know, the one is an anthology of different authors. At least people get a taste of a lot of different things.
Right, and you know, the thing about my anthologies are that they're all stories that I like. So when authors submit stories to me, I generally pull the stories that speak to me. And so all of my anthologies are maybe a little different from most of the anthologies that you'll read because they're all kind of, they all have my sensibility,
mm-hmm.
Which tends to be a little edgier, maybe a little harder core than other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of know when you're picking up a D.L. King book that it's going to be more intense maybe than some of the other books you might pick up.
Well, that also translates into hotter than other books.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I think, well, you know, they're hot to me, and if it's hot to me, I'm hoping it's going to be hot for you as well. Now, there's another one that just came out, my most recent book, called She Who Must Be Obeyed,
mm-hmm.
and that's lesbian erotica, and it's femme-dominant. So, and I'm not saying it's all butch femme, because it's not necessarily all butch femme, although that's in there, but it's just femme-dominant.
Mm-hmm.
So, they could, the partners could be two femmes, but each story is, it's femme-dom for lesbians.
that's another fun thing to explore. Okay, so tell me about the Melano Project.
Well, the Melano Project is my first novel.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually only written two, the Melano Project and The Art of Melano. They're femdom. They're hardcore medical fetish femdom. So a lot of times you'll hear people say, this is not for the faint of heart. Well, these books really are not for the faint of heart. The Melano Project is the first thing I wrote, actually. I sat down to write a book because, as you do, you
mm-hmm.
know. and that's what came out.
When did you start writing? When did you say, I want to write about this?
It was right around 2000. And I did. You know, I wanted to write a book. It has been something that I've been thinking about for a long, long time, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to write. I'm an avid reader of science fiction, and I was an avid reader of horror at the time as well. And I thought maybe I would write something that was horror or something that was science fiction. And I didn't really know what I was going to write about, and I remember sitting down to start writing this book, this nebulous book that I had no idea what it was going to be about. And the Melano Project came out, and it was just something that I needed to put down on paper, evidently, because it practically wrote itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that a lot of people have had the same experience with their first novel. because it's in you, and it's something that speaks to you, or it's your fantasy, or it's your entertainment, or it's your idea of the perfect way to spend a day kind of thing. And so you just pour it out. You know what it's about, and you just put it on the paper. And that's the way the Melano Project happened.
Well, it sounds like that worked for you. For me, my first book was really awful. It's been in a trunk, and it's never going to see the light of day.
Oh, no.
It was very, embarrassingly autobiographical and self-indulgent, and it needed to stay in that trunk. So sometimes it works better than others.
Well, sometimes it's also like your practice run.
That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. I've heard someone else say that everybody has a bad novel in them. So if you write it first, you get it out of the way.
And I'm not saying the Melano Project is a great work of literature, because I really...
Well, no, it's obviously good enough that it's still out there and people are still buying it and reading it, and it got you started.
Oh, yeah. And for what it's worth, it's my go-to book. I think you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
It is my go-to book. And I read it and I think, okay, it's not bad. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I could do so much better now. But it's still my go-to book.
So when you're writing, do you think about specific erotic scenes that you want to write about, or do characters, how much does the role of the actual character play into deciding what the story is going to be about?
Well, most of my stories are definitely about the character.
Mm-hmm.
But most of my stories are also written to calls for submission.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't usually sit down and decide I'm going to write a story and figure out what that story is about and then write it. Normally, somebody is doing a book and they want a story about X. And so I know, okay, I have to write a story about X.
Okay.
So I find people to populate that story, and then it becomes about them. But it's about X. It's about anal sex, or it's about...
I was about to say I saw an anal sex, and I thought, oh, wow, all the stories in there are about anal sex.
Yeah, it's another area I liked.
I'm very fond of anal sex, so yeah, that's going to go on my reading list.
Me too. Well, there are a couple of really good ones out there. Rachel Kramer Bussell has put out several really good books, and I'm in them. Her latest one that I'm in, anyway, is called Baby Got Back, and it's all anal sex. And then Allison Tyler put out a book called Luscious, which is all anal sex, that I'm also in.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all, if you like anal sex, those are really good books to try.
Well, I am so glad. Is there any other thing that you would want to say to people out there who say to you, gee, I really wish I could write a book?
Oh, well, you know, if you really want to write a book, you should sit down and write a book or write a story.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be intimidated by the idea of writing a book or a short story. You should just sit down and write, because all it is telling yourself a story, and you can tell yourself a story. It may not be at the level that it needs to be published, but it gets you started.
Mm-hmm.
And writing is a skill you can learn and master. Anybody can learn to write well.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that anybody necessarily has a story in them that is going to be a bestseller,
right.
But it means that anybody can learn how to write at least a grammatically correct story.
Right.
And a story that makes sense. But if you have a story that means something to you, you should sit down and put it on paper. There's nothing intimidating about writing. And it's kind of a solitary profession, so nobody has to watch you do it. You can make a fool of yourself as much as you want, because you don't have to let anyone read it
uh-huh.
until you're ready for them to read it.
You said that The Melano Project was your first book. What press put that out?
It was originally put out as an ebook by Renaissance.
Okay.
And I then later, my contract gave them rights to electronic book, but it did not give them print rights. And so I later did the print edition myself. And so you can get it as an ebook and as a print book.
Excellent. So the great thing, I think ebooks have helped erotica sales because now you can read it anywhere and nobody has to know what you're reading.
That's right. That's right. And they're also great for those of us who are impatient, you know, because at 3 a.m, you can just download a book and start reading.
Exactly. You're never without something good to read. Well, DL, I thank you very much for sharing your time with us. And I think that you've got a lot of stuff out there that our listeners would enjoy sampling. And I hope that they will do that. You've got a website, dlkingerotica.com.
Yes. And I also have a blog, which is also dlkingerotica.blogspot.com.
Ah. And we will be adding those links to our KinkyCast website page. We're going to have a page that's dedicated to Beyond 50, which is all kinds of wonderful erotica that's available for people whose curiosity was piqued by 50 Shades and want to go beyond.
Oh, can I just say a little bit about Beyond 50?
Yeah.
Because I am actually editing the collection, well, it's really an anthology, I suppose, of teasers for all the authors who write BDSM.
Right, I sent you one of mine.
Yes, and it's going to be in the book.
Yay!
And so this is going to be something that I think people are really going to like, and we're going to give it away. It's going to be for free. Nobody has to buy it, but they can just taste everything from nonfiction to poetry to femdom to femsub to lesbian to gay to science fiction to anything their hearts desire. They will find a taste in this book so that people can have an idea of what's out there.
Yeah, and like you said, it's absolutely free.
Absolutely free. And it's going to come out sometime, hopefully, around the time the movie comes out. So,
Which is Valentine's Day 2015, I believe.
That's right. That's right. So we want to make sure that this book is ready for people. So once they go and watch the movie,
they get all excited and then come home and they can look up this and say, ooh, I want that.
That's right.
Well, that's great, and thank you for, you know, the Beyond 50 is a great sort of author-driven. It's nobody is getting paid for doing this promotion. A lot of different writers and people who support writers are putting their talents to work for promoting the Beyond 50, and so thank you for being willing to lend your not inconsiderable skills as an editor to doing that book.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm really happy to do it, too. It's going to be great.
All righty. Well, everybody, this is KinkyCast signing off. Kate Kinsey here with D.L. King, and we will see you next time.
You have been listening to episode 46A of the KinkyCast. To hear the second part of our special Beyond 50 presentation, choose episode 46B. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Kate Kinsey, I'm Max.